Hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to our Vital Health Community Q&A call. It's the October 2018 call, and I'm here at your beck and call, at your service, to support you in whatever you need supporting in. Questions, comments, share some successes, share some resources, ask for resources, whatever you might need for me, from me, I'm here for. So the way that you get to ask your questions is you use your telephone keypad and do *2 if you're on the phone. That's my preferred method because I like to really connect and hear people's voices. And then we can go back and forth, because if you have a question and I have an answer, but I have another question usually, so we'd end up having to go back and forth if it's in writing, and it goes much quicker and we get to connect if we do it in on the voice line. But you're totally welcome to do it the other way. We have the Q&A, which you'll see off to the left-hand side. And some people have put in questions in advance, and I'll start there. That way you'll always know that if you put questions in advance, they'll be towards the beginning of the recording. So if you're short on time and don't want to listen to the whole thing, you get your questions answered at the beginning. But know that when you put questions in beforehand and you don't show up for the call and you're not on for me to clarify, there maybe I leave you with a few. I give you some answers, but it may not be the best answer if I can't get some more information from you. So there you go. And then there's also the chat where we can have conversations. And Lynn Rose says, I have to leave before 6. So you're welcome to ask and answer your questions. So again, if you're a practitioner, then these calls are really for you. They're not for you to ask questions about your clients. And the reason for that is because it can get too detailed, and this is really about taking care of you. So if you have questions about your own health and your practitioner, wonderful. Ask them here. That's, you're here just as another person as opposed to a practitioner here. So it really helps you to take care of you. All right. So I just wanted to know that. And I can't diagnose, and I can't give you a diagnosis or a treatment, but I will give you advice on, you know, educational resources and what certain things might mean and specific actions that you might want to take based on what you're telling me. But just make sure that you understand that it's not, you know, a diagnosis, and I'm not replacing a one-on-one relationship with a healthcare professional. So *2 raises your hand. I'd love, love, love to hear from you. I see some people joining, John and Lynn and Gail and Jeannie and Pat and Catherine and Valerie, Lynn again, a different Lynn, and Marsha. So I see you guys all on the phone, and then I can't see names of who's on here. Let me see what it says. It just tells me a number of people who are on the web. So I don't really. No, most of you are on the phone. That's kind of interesting. Usually we have most people on the chat. So go ahead and start to me, and I will answer your questions. And I'm going to start with Marsha and a couple of others who submitted questions in advance, and then we'll go from there. So Catherine, hi Catherine. Ooh, my tailbone is sore due to sitting at the computer. Will it ever heal? The soreness is felt in bed also. Any remedies? So my question would be, how do you know it's from sitting at the computer? Is it sore while you're sitting on the computer? So you assume it's from sitting at the computer. But I kind of look back to see if you had any specific falls that you landed on it, first of all, to make sure it's not a traumatic origin. Sitting on a chair, especially if it's a hard chair, if you're sitting on it all day long, it can cause pressure against the coccyx. It could cause a subluxation, meaning a decrease in the movement of that whole sacrum coccyx area, or out of position. So I would have it looked at. They do have these pillows called donut pillows. It's just a little circle, and you can sit on it. Your buttocks will be on the cushion, and then your tailbone will kind of hang out of there, so it's not actually touching the chair. That would be a good thing to do. I would say make sure you're not sitting for really long periods of time in a row without getting up and walking around. So every, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, get up, walk around the room, stretch it out. But I definitely look into that. Will it ever heal? Sure, as long as you take away whatever the cause is. But if the cause is actually sitting on a hard chair, you know, 8 hours a day without much in the way of breaks, it probably won't until you start to take care of it. That also responds well to alternating hot and cold. So you can get the little donut cushion, and you can actually, while you're sitting on the donut cushion, you can put in, you know, some ice and then cold and alternate that. So that can be helpful too. And also getting checked out by, you know, a physiatrist, a chiropractor, not orthopedic, because they generally don't deal with musculoskeletal unless it's broken and needs surgery. But, you know, somebody like that, physical therapist, chiropractor, osteopath, that's what I was thinking of, an old-fashioned osteopath. And Catherine also asked about leg cramps. So that's a great question, because leg cramps can be of a number of different origins, too. So it could be a magnesium deficiency. It could be that you're low in magnesium. It could be that you have plenty of magnesium in your diet, but you're not absorbing it real well because of some digestive issues. So you want to look at that. It can also be potassium. What I was finding, we learn and think about it mostly being related to magnesium, but when we were doing our Sweet Spot program, even before it became the Sweet Spot program, when it was called Before Beyond, it was a blood sugar balancing. We had people take magnesium as one of their supplements, and a lot of people started to get leg cramps after starting the magnesium. And then we realized that it was probably a potassium deficiency because they were taking out some of the higher glycemic foods that are high in potassium, like potatoes and bananas, and taking magnesium, which accentuated the difference between them. So it could be magnesium or potassium. One great way is to get some magnesium oil, and then you rub it. It's magnesium sulfate solution, but it's kind of almost like an oily consistency, and you can massage it into those muscles, which is an awesome thing to do, just because it feels good, but also it helps with getting the magnesium right there into it. Epsom salts baths can be really good to help you replenish magnesium, and then of course you could take a magnesium supplement. I like a powdered magnesium supplements or liquid magnesium supplements because they tend to be better absorbed than taking capsules. Marsha, more about mini cleanse. Yay. Do we stay on the 4 hours between meals or just drink when truly hungry or hangry? Yeah, that's a great question, Marsha. When I'm doing, or I'm going in with a green cleanse with people and they're really slowing it down, ideally, yeah, you go with the 4 hours between. But, and definitely if you're thin, on the thin side, then I would say definitely you should go with the when you're hungry. So if you have extra weight, just hang out there. If you get really hangry and you're about to bite somebody's head off and it's really uncomfortable, sure, you can drink when you're ready, but I prefer that you stick with the 4 hours between. Yeah. And Marsha, one of our program friends said you recommended using distilled water for the body bio minerals test, but others said they didn't think it had to be distilled. I have a Berkey, can I just use my Berkey filtered water? Is it a reason to be distilled? The only distilled water I found is Plus Bar. Yeah. So I tend to just use my own filtered water from home, which is reverse osmosis. So I don't really think it has to be. Okay. And that's all I see there. Let me refresh it and see if there's any others there. Okay. Yep, I do see a couple more. Gail and John. So Gail says I had a high red assessment for acetylcholine. Anything I should be doing or not doing? Ah, Gail. So acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter that's associated with the parasympathetic nervous system. And if you remember from my description of heart math, our goal is to get us out of sympathetic, which is fight, flight, you know, stress response, high cortisol, into parasympathetic, which is the calming. And heart math will do that. Meditation will do that. So I would say on a regular basis, doing your heart math minimum 5 times a day. And I had a fun conversation with somebody today in the program, and she was saying how heart math 5 times a day, yeah, got it. I do it all day long. I just do it whenever I feel like, you know, anything's coming up. And that's really what you want to do is more heart math, more breathing, more exhalation. And here's what I find with a lot of folks who stay in this cortisol level and stress level is that the exhale is shortened. So say I say to somebody, hey, let's do some heart math together. Let's take some deep breaths. They'll go and start talking like a third of the way through the exhale. Make your exhale longer than your inhale. Make your exhale longer than your inhale, because the exhale is going to get you into that parasympathetic and increase the level of acetylcholine. So that's one thing. The other thing is acetylcholine ad comes from, you know, phosphatidylcholine, acetylcholine. They come from the same choline as a nutrient from food. And one of the things that has really good amounts of that is sunflower lecithin. Sunflower seeds do, of course, the whole seeds, but if you're looking for a higher amount to really help those levels, sunflower lecithin, you can buy it on Amazon Organic, you can buy it on Raw Food World Organic. I like it there. That's our organic raw. And I use it. I added it today to my elixir. You know, it's trying to keep warm because the weather's so cold. And I was, I made an elixir with a bunch of different herbs and I blended up some Brazil nuts and hemp seeds in there to make it nice and creamy and get me my omega-3s and my selenium. And I just put a teaspoon of the sunflower lecithin in there. Sunflower lecithin is an emulsifier that will hold, it will pull the water and the oil together so that, you know how when you mix something that's oil and water, they don't mix and they separate. The acetylcholine will help that. So it'll also help, it's a neurotransmitter for that supports you in parasympathetic. So exhalation, I'm going to say breathing, but with the real big emphasis on making your exhalation a little longer than your inhalation and doing some heart math breaks throughout the day, just stopping, doing a deep diaphragmatic breathing and letting it go. And then looking at sunflower seeds or sunflower lecithin as a supplementation or adding it to smoothies. John, hey John, how many avocados can you eat per day or week? You heard that you can develop an allergy or sensitivity to them if you eat too many. I gained 2 pounds in the last 2 weeks. Yay, John. I would say, here's the thing. I would trust your body, right? You can develop an allergy to something if you're eating too much of it, but trust your body, right? Here's what I've had with the, I've had somebody who asked me this question years ago, she goes, but I'm eating at least one a day, sometimes two a day, and sometimes I've even had three. And I said, just trust your body for a while. You'll get to the point where it'll just say, nah, I'm not in the mood for an avocado today. Safely, you know, we don't know what your threshold would be in terms of developing an allergy to it. Avocados, they're not high in protein, and protein is usually what creates allergy when those antigens get through the leaky gut. You're only going to develop an allergy to it if you have a leaky gut, which you probably do. But it's not a high protein food. The other thing that you could develop is a sensitivity to the particular saccharides that are in it. It's considered one of the FODMAP foods. So if you have, you know, like SIBO or something like that, it can be problematic. But I would trust it one or two a day, and somebody thin like you who's trying to put on the extra weight, I wouldn't be concerned about it. And vary it. I like to vary the fats from day to day. So maybe today you eat two or three avocados and tomorrow you load up on macadamia nuts and olives, right? So vary your foods and that's going to give you the best bet. But I don't see that there's any set number by which I would say, no, don't go past it. When you're in Denver, I'm going to be in Denver on Friday. Saturday, Thursday? Yeah. Oh, Marsha wants to know, do I grind up and eat the avocado seed? A lot of people do. I think I tried it once during a class. I just threw it in there. I'm always afraid I'm going to ruin my blender blade. I know that's silly, but a lot of people say you can do it. So there's supposed to be some good nutrients in there, and give it a try. And if you feel fine with it, go for it. But I haven't done it much. Catherine, is there an age where people will usually get gray hair? Some people don't gray. What's the best way to keep the gray away? Oh, boy, that's a great question. If I had a super consistent answer for that, I would be rich, wouldn't I? There is no typical age. I know people that start to go gray at age 30. My aunt died in her 60s, and she didn't have gray hair. My mom died in her 50s, and she had a full head of gray hair. Right? And they're related. My sister turned completely gray at age 30 and nobody really knew it because she was dyeing her hair. And then she got pregnant and she didn't want to dye her hair while she was pregnant because she didn't want to expose the baby. And we watched her and she has very short hair. So suddenly she has a complete head of gray hair at age 30. I got my first grays when I was around 50. Very variable. And some people say it has to do with adrenal stress. It may have to do with adrenal stress. I think a lot of it has to do with genetics. And then the melanin, the pigment has to do, it comes from pituitary and hypothalamus. And if we're under a lot of stress otherwise, right, we're taking away some of that ability to make that. And those are just some conjectures and guesses. But yeah, I wish I had some way to keep it away consistently. But all the stuff I teach you, like the good diet and all that kind of stuff, can be helpful as well. And the stress, lack of stress, decreasing it, doing more heart math and sleep, super important thing. Keeping your blood sugar steady, all that. Okay, so let me see if I refresh that. Keep coming up with more. Catherine, this is a really good question. Do I need to chew my supplements or cut in half for them to be absorbed? And I would say it's going to probably be absorbed better if you crush them. And if there's minerals in there, you have some acid with it, like a little vitamin C powdered or some lemon juice or some apple cider vinegar. I prefer to get liquid or powdered supplements to be really well absorbed. The ionic minerals are going to be better absorbed than a capsule. And certainly if it's a, if the supplement is a tablet, there's usually tableting agents in there, stearates and sometimes shellac and other things to hold them together. And in that case, if it is a tablet, you know, crushing them and putting them in water and taking them, or finding forms of the supplements you're taking in either liquid or powdered form. Yeah. And chewing them will help. It'll certainly help. Okay, refresh. Okay, so I got those. I'm going to look in the chat. Oops. Yeah, thank you, Lynn, for putting in some other food sources. Let's see. Asking for thoughts for Kimberly, who's having a challenging time after her surgery. Tell me more about what the challenges are. There are certain nutrients that are helpful after surgery to help replenish. Lynn had a really nice protocol. Yeah, there she wrote it there. Yeah, so Lynn is asking that. Let's see. Toxicity from breast cancer. Yeah, I would say, you know, the vitamin C is super important. Liver support type things, milk thistle, dandelion, tea, hawthorn berry can tend to be good for that. Burdock root, you know, just really supportive types of liver stuff to enhance those liver pathways can be very helpful. In our module, let's see, the BFF, the Body Freedom Foundations, in the nutrition, the toxicity, and the environment part, there's a thing about some toxicity stuff and some nutrients that support liver and digestion, you know, making sure she's keeping her body moving. And certainly Lynn's stuff there, but she's going to ask that. Okay, good. John, what did John say? I can't hear anything through the broadcast, so I had to dial in. That's interesting. I had trouble with, I'm on my laptop right now because I couldn't hear on my my main computer on Instant Teleseminar, but I had Zoom calls before and after, and I had no problem with it, so who knows? I mean, it's just so hard to predict. Okay, so I got that. Acetylcholine is one of the chemicals found in our nerves to communicate with the brain. That's true. Yeah, so she's talking about a specific supplement. You know, I would tend to want to see you do it more from a food perspective and from a stress perspective. Lecithin, yes, lecithin. That's why I said sunflower lecithin. And you can get phosphatidyl, if you want to get supplementation, you can actually get the choline or get phosphatidylcholine, which will get converted there. I don't know enough about the superzine. It's more like a nutraceutical. So I'd rather do food. And Lynn says other sources of acetylcholine are avocados, good old avocados, love them, and almonds. Nut butters for fats. Yes, for John. Cocoa butter, yep. My red hair turned blonde in my 50s. Lucky you. That's lovely. Monroe said, I was told gray hair comes from too much air in the hair shaft. I think it was an insult, though. Ha ha. Lynn says she puts avocado seeds in smoothies. They do have nutrients in them. So, I mean, they will have some proteins. Most of the fat is going to be in the fruit, but the seeds, just like sunflower seeds or just like the seeds of, say, I don't know, pine nuts and some of the other nuts and seeds, they have more of the fat, but they have more protein than you would get in the avocado. So you may get some good stuff there. Sean is also using sunflower butter as well as chia and hemp. So rotating all of these. It's great. I don't know if you've tried my bars, but those can be an extra little boost in between meals too. Oh, thank you about Hosho Wu. I forgot about that. That they call that the old man's, they have a fun name for it in Chinese medicine, but Hosho Wu is a good one to, you can get it powdered. You can probably get it on vegan natural foods. Stick a little bit of that in your smoothies. Yeah. I want my red hair back. Ah, but at least you have blonde and not gray. Yes. Brandon says, I've even got some gray hairs coming in. And Brandon's in his 20s. Uh-oh. Glutathione is sourced from avocado. Yeah. I got the bars and eating them as well. Very good. Yay, good. Lynn Rose said, I started graying at 18. Oh, wow, that's really low. Yeah, so stress can do it, right? So we look back at what's going on stress-wise. And so, yeah, we all have stress. Face it, right? We all were teenagers at one point, right? So that in and of itself. And then if you had some rocky situations at home or at school that added to your stress, and then you graduated high school and had to go to college and college entrance exams. And, you know, our lives are stressful, and we don't get taught really early on how to identify and manage and shift those stressful situations. Some of us have those GAD gene SNPs or some of the others that cause us to be more hypervigilant is a nice way to put it. And that puts a strain on our adrenal system. But then you look at it and look at my sister who got gray at age 30. She was completely gray at age 30. I've had friends, you know, in their late 20s, 29-ish even, starting to go gray. And my mom was gray younger, probably in her 30s and early 40s, but her sister kept her dark hair until she was in her 60s and died without, because I thought she dyed it. And my aunt insisted, no, don't dye my hair. And I knew she didn't dye her hair when she got sick and she wasn't able to dye her hair. She still had black hair. So it's all different. It's all variable. And I think when we really break the code on that, somebody's going to make a fortune. And Lynn Rose said, my mother didn't gray at 80. And my dad grayed early, right? So you got it super early at age 18. Interesting. These are big conversations. It's like the balding thing, right? And men always say, well, you know, I've read that I get bald, so it means I'm more virile because testosterone is linked with male pattern baldness. But what they don't realize, it's not overall testosterone. It's a particular constituent of or metabolite of testosterone called DHT, dihydrotestosterone, which is actually the dangerous one that contributes more to prostate cancer. So don't use your balding as a badge of courage, like, whoa, yeah, more virile. It also may mean that you're higher risk for prostate cancer. So everything is a double-edged sword, and I think that we protect ourselves from these issues with really a good attention to all the basic lifestyle foundations that we're that we teach. We teach in ERC. Those of you who joined us for the Body Freedom Foundations program, which is like, it's like a subset of ERC. It's an amazing program to get us back in touch with what we really need to be doing to support it. So if anybody doesn't know what that is and wants to know, just reach out to Lynn and she can tell you because we can still get you in. Let's see. Okay. So that I refreshed. Let's see what's in the chat. Okay. Questions. Okay, now I'm going to look for star two. Come on, people. And Brandon, Louisa was on a call earlier and wanted your contact information for one of her patients with ulcerative colitis. So please Lynn, put the two of them in touch because she wanted help from you. Louisa's an optometrist in our NEPT program. Pat from Washington. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hey. How can I help you today?
I'm still working on my digestion, believe it or not. I can't seem to figure out exactly what's going on. My latest question is, is there a test for bile production? I don't know how to figure out what might be keeping me having a lot of abdominal cramping and gas and bloating. I don't know. I'm looking for tests that I can do and then maybe take a look at those and see what I can
do. All right. So what tests have you done so far? Have you done a stool test to see your flora and parasites and all that sort of stuff?
No.
Okay. Have you done an organic acid test?
No. I don't know what kind of test to do. I guess that's what I'm really asking.
Okay, good. Because I don't know of a specific test for bile, like how much bile are you producing, but I think if you look at that as your question, you're narrowing it down too much because the symptoms you're having are the gas and the bloating, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. And if you assume it's liver and just test something in the liver, you may be off base. So here's a couple of things that I would recommend. I would say organic acid test. We call it the OAT test for short, organic acid test. I mean, you can go online. You can order it on our site if you have access to my lab testing page. Or you can go to Great Plains Lab, and they'll let you order it direct. And you can probably even order it on Direct Labs if you just type in organic acid test. So one of those three, find the best price for you and order it that way. Okay. And that's helped for a lot of metabolic intermediates. But the thing related to the gut is there's a whole page of metabolites that would be produced and be in your system. And it's a urine test, so it's easy. It would be in your system if you had an overgrowth of yeasts and funguses or bacteria. So it's really nice, comprehensive to give you an idea. It doesn't tell you what they are. You don't have to poop into a cup and, you know, figure it out that way. But it gives you an idea. Whoops, I've got some imbalances here. It also gives you a lot of other indications. It'll give you some liver indications like, you know, glutathione and detox and that sort of stuff. So I think that or doing the stool test. Usually, you know, stool tests are, okay, so stool test disadvantages, right? The obvious. You have to poop for 3 days and collect your poop and send it in. Not the most convenient test in the world. Number two is that some of the organisms that they test for can die in transit. Even though they give you preservatives and all that, they can die in transit and you may not really get it. The advantage is that if they do grow something, they can actually culture it and then use different herbs to see if they can kill it and tell you which of the herbs actually work for the bugs living in you. I will say that of all the ones I do, less than 50% of them do we get the sensitivities on because they just don't always catch it. So, that's that. And then the disadvantages of the oat is that you don't know what organisms there are. And you can differentiate between there's probably some yeast because you have these particular toxins. There's probably some bacteria because you have these particular toxins. And then there's one indication that says it's probably Clostridia because you have this particular toxin. But there's not like you're not going, oh, I measured it and we have this organism or that in there, but it's a really good overall test because it gives you your nutrient status, your mitochondrial status, your neurotransmitter status, your gut, and some amino acids and liver stuff, detox stuff. So it's a nice test. I mean, it's not cheap. It's probably around $300, but it's a good test. So you've got those two tests that you can do, one or the other or both if you really have unlimited funds that you want to spend on your health.
Yeah, well, it's been so long, I'm ready to start spending just anything I can find. It's been an interesting thing. I've done elimination, and I just cannot figure out why I'm still having so much trouble digesting.
Yeah. Now, have you done bitters?
Yeah, regularly? I do those all the time.
You do it regularly? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do digestive enzymes?
I started using them again. I've used them off and on. They seem to be often strong for my stomach, so I can only do them when I'm really going to have a big meal. Otherwise, I seem to have burping and reflux from them.
Okay. So that would tend to say to me that it's not so much that you're having reflux from them, but that the enzymes in them, the proteolytic enzymes, are aggravating your lining, and your lining is thinning, right? So that you don't have a nice plump endothelial lining, because though it wouldn't hurt if they did. So if you have a little thinning, then the protease in there, the protein digestion, can actually bore through and actually hurt. So you might look at some slippery elm and DGL. Have you done those?
Yes, I do slippery elm practically daily. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you do it before you take the enzymes?
Depends on how I'm feeling. I usually do it, no, because I usually do it in the morning.
Okay, so here's the thing with slippery elm, and that's a mistake a lot of people make. They'll just take it at one point a day. If you're having digestive issues, I usually recommend that you do it to help to protect the stomach, the endothelial lining throughout the digestive tract, but you take them about 15 minutes before a meal.
Okay.
Okay, and then if you do have an upset from the meal, then take it again after the meal, and you can take it every 15 minutes until it goes away. So that's the thing with slippery elm. But DGL is another one. I don't know if you've done DGL. It's a licorice.
Done regular licorice root. I didn't do the DGL form.
Okay, and how much?
Just a little, and I didn't last with it very long. I tried it, and I just don't remember exactly. It's a while now.
My concern with doing the regular licorice, which I like a lot, but some folks have a tendency to higher blood pressure, so you can't do the larger amounts that you can with the DGL. There's been a ton of studies that show that DGL, if you stick with it very consistently for 6 weeks, you see a much better... response than taking ulcer medication when it comes to pain. Using the medication and fixing the pain.
Well, I think we're
losing
our connection. No, we're losing our connection there. I heard the beginning of DGL, something about 6 weeks, and then I lost you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, now just fine. I'm sorry to have you repeat.
Oh, a temporary blip. So DGL has been studied, back to back with neck and neck with ulcer medication. And about 6 weeks, because it takes about that time to really get some healing going with taking it consistently. I mean, you're going to be healing all along, but you really have this real significant. And at about 6 weeks is when there's that crossover. Like if people just take it and they report their symptom relief, they're doing better with ulcer medication. But as we know, ulcer medication is not doing anything to solve the problem. So there's a crossover at around 6 weeks, maybe a little sooner, a little later for some, where the DGL feels way better because it's actually healing. So you might look at that, and I would do them consistently. One of the ways I do it is I'll get some DGL powder or licorice root powder, as long as, you just have to monitor your blood pressure. About a teaspoon of that with a teaspoon of slippery elm in about 8 ounces of water, stir it around till it gets a little thick. And drink that about 15 minutes before your meal. So you're doing it 3 times a day, not just once a day.
Sure. Every before every meal?
I would do it before every meal.
Mean by 3 times a day? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Right.
Exactly. Okay. And give that a try. And then if you take your enzymes with the meal, so you're doing that about 15 minutes before, see if you don't notice a difference after, even a week or so when you take enzymes. With the meal after you've done that, then it makes a difference.
Okay. Good.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I'm just trying to narrow it down, and I'm not making much progress on my own, so I thought I'd bring it up again just to what you can find.
Yeah,
it's very helpful.
If you want to be handheld through it, we can sign you up. I don't know if you're in Grand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can, a little extra and get assigned a private coach. If Steph has any openings, she's amazing, and she's like our resident gut guru. We can put you in with her, and if she doesn't, we have others who can help you and support you through it and really help you dig and figure it out.
Okay. And thanks very
much. Just reach out to Lynn, and she'll help you with that. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you. Sure. All right. Who else? Questions, comments? Anybody want to add anything? Any other things that you've found that worked for you with situations similar to what Pat was just saying? Anything? Well, I see we got some new folks that came on. Valerie came on, and I think Gail, you were on before. I can't remember who was on before and who wasn't. Christy, I didn't see you before. Linda. Who has questions? Sandy? questions or comments? Let's see. Mayan abdominal massage. That's another thing that's written in the chat. So, let me see what else. Sunflower butter as well. So sunflower butter would have some of that lecithin in it too. So you're doing some good stuff. The reason when you said sunflower butter, it reminded me of my bars because they're made with sunflower butter. Is there any way to cure adenomyositis at age 52? So here's the thing. I don't think about disease as cure or not cure, treating or not treating. What we would want to do with anybody at whatever age is to look at what are all the stressors on their system? What are all the imbalances that are going on in the system that are contributing to these symptoms that have been labeled a specific diagnosis? So a diagnosis is a box that you're put in from medicine based on a bunch of different symptoms. It's like, oh, you have this condition, you have condition B, you have condition C, when in reality it's just a name that's been given to a clustering of symptoms. It doesn't tell us about the underlying mechanism. So the goal is always to find out, okay, I've got these symptoms that medicine calls adenomyositis. Okay, what does that mean? What's actually going on? Let me look at my habits. Let me look at my nutritional deficiencies or excesses. Let me look at some of my genetics that maybe predispose me to needing some different probiotics in my regime. Okay, so that's that thing. Massage can be given in the comfort and privacy of abdominal massage, lens mentioning. Anytime you have a gut issue, look up Mayan massage. It's really got some good stuff. Christy said her uterine seems to be her weak spot. So your uterus is growing these cysts, tumors, whatever we want to call them. And let me, Lynn mentioned something that reminds me. She said old blood. That's kind of a Chinese medicine concept. Stagnant blood, old blood, dry heat, moist heat, dry cold, moist cold. These are concepts in Chinese medicine. When you have a particular quote unquote condition, right, it's good to look at the imbalances from different perspectives. Yes, we can look from a Western perspective. We can look from a nutritional perspective. We can look from a Chinese medicine perspective. We can look from a Ayurvedic perspective. What's out of balance in our body? What can we do from our habits, our diet, our supplementation, our movements? What can we do to restore balance? That's what it's all about. And 52 is not too old to restore balance, believe me. Other ways it can help. So Lynn's just pointing out how that will do. This is cool stuff. Like this Mayan massage increases endorphins, which are pain-related pain receptors, brings fresh oxygenated blood to the uterus. Everything that gets more oxygen will get better, mostly everything. Aids the uterus in getting rid of blood clots, helps strengthen the uterine muscles. So there we go. Christy, you're coming back and saying no fibroids, no cysts, get biopsy as well, normal, great. And you've still got this issue. So let's look at it from a different imbalance perspective, from a Chinese medicine perspective, from stagnation, so from blood stagnation, and how can you improve that? So, yes, and Marcia says this sounds amazing, Mayan massage. Thank you. Yeah, we talk about that. Well, we talk about abdominal massage in the Grand Program. Right? After a meal, just lay on your back, bend your knees, and just give your body a nice massage. It works well for constipation. I've had people, when I was doing massage, I had people on my table who said, what's going on? I'm constipated, haven't had a bowel movement in days. So, and they'd get up off the table and start running to the bathroom because we get things moving. We get things stimulated. So it's great. It's great overall. Combination, right? Everything is a combination of manual medicine, of nutritional supplementation, food. food wise, even the way we eat our meals. Are you sitting down? First thing we teach in our gut repair program is breathing and appreciation with every meal. Shift yourself from sympathetic dominant mode, which is fight, flight, run, run, turns off the digestion. We shift ourselves from there into parasympathetic, which is calming, which goes back to Gail's question earlier, which had to do with the acetylcholine, right? We want to add, we want to accentuate that. Yep. Would Mayan massage be good for men with leaky gut also? I think it would be good for any sex. Absolutely. Absolutely. We want to just keep circulation to our whole abdominal region. You know, we tend to sit all day long and you're hunched over and those muscles aren't being stretched and everything gets compressed. Let's open it up and lay on your back and bring circulation to those areas that often get overlooked. Let's see who else is here. Question. Okay, cool. Okay, so we talked Christy's question here. After menopause, libido went to zero. Do I need to address this? Are bioidentical hormones needed? Are there other options to normalize libido, or is it normal to have no libido after menopause? I will tell you, it is not normal to have no libido after menopause. It's common, very common. And what happens is we're going up, you know, all through life, and the stress levels are zonking our adrenals, which can decrease the production of sex hormones. And then we go through menopause and all of that stops and the ovaries don't produce anymore. And suddenly we're relying on good old adrenals, which are burned out. So imbalances between the hormones can cause it. I don't have enough information to tell you how to address it. I would get a Dutch test to see what's going on hormonally. And I would look at, you know, overall your diet, your stress levels, add heart math, add meditation, and then look at, are bioidenticals needed? Maybe. It depends on what's going on for you. But that's not something I would jump right into. And the reason is a lot of docs will prescribe bioidentical hormones based on a blood test result. And that's one estrogen that they're testing, one level of progesterone, testosterone, but they're not looking at all the metabolites. Yeah, so, you know, estriol tends to be a safe estrogen that can be supplemented over the counter. Bezwecken used to have little suppositories that can be inserted vaginally to help moisten the tissue there. But no, it's not normal, and I would say look at it. Yeah, I would address it because it's indication that there's something out of balance. Love the Dutch test. That's a good one. Alex wants to know, are burnt or blackened vegetables carcinogenic? You know, whenever you burn something or you charbroil it, you get a production of chemicals called heterocyclic amines. And those tend to be carcinogenic. So I might eat something, you burn to them and they get blackened. I wouldn't eat them because I think they can be dangerous. Alex, in the AM, I have gunk in my eyes where I've never had before. What might be the cause? Yeah, so it could be toxicity. I look to see, you know, I don't know how recently this is when you said you never had it before. Has this been going on for a week? You know, maybe there's some kind of acute thing. Maybe there's some low-grade infection in the eyes that are causing that. It could be a sinus thing where the liquid is not draining, like a plug in the little hole that go from the eye, it's not draining properly, so the gunk gets built up. You can certainly have an eye doctor look at it to see if there are any mechanical obstruction things there. Okay, let's see. Refresh. What's the best vitamin D? You know, everybody's going to be a little bit different. I like liquid vitamin D. Some people don't. You can do a patch, so it's skin vitamin D. So if you have poor lipid absorption, fat absorption, low function of your gallbladder and liver, your gallbladder that's been removed, you may be better off doing a topical, and you can get a little patch similar to vitamin B12 patches, and you can wear that. I like liquids that are emulsified, and there are some good brands, Thorne, Biotics, Premier Research, maybe Seeking Health. Those tend to be my favorites. But I've had situations where somebody was like, vitamin D deficient. She's taking like 20,000 a day. She's still showing up vitamin D deficient. So she just decided to just switch around. And she tried like 5 different brands before she found one that worked best for her. Good questions, guys. Pat, are digestive enzymes a way to help the system function better on its own and at some point one would not need to take anymore? Yeah, Pat, that's a great question. It depends on your diet. So if you're eating lots of good fermented foods, you're germinating nuts and seeds, you're eating a lot of raw veggies and vegetable juices and very little in the way of cooked food, and you stay away from cooked and processed fats, then the idea would be that you don't need to take the digestive enzymes, that your body would get stronger on its own. Okay, so that's all those questions. I'm going to go back and see if anybody's hand is up. Does anybody want to talk to me? There's John. Hi, John. Let me open your line. Hi, John. You're open.
Hey, Dr. Rudimarie, thanks. Yeah, I thought it'd be easier just to ask this question, so it just dawned on me. I'm glad I thought of it. So Lisa and I, we spoke again yesterday, I guess it was, maybe a couple of days. Actually, what is today? Today's Tuesday. It was last week already. That's how time flies. And one of the things in her write-up of kind of game plan is thinking at some point considering IV immunoglobulin therapy. Mm-hmm. I think she said to run that by you and get your thoughts on it. I don't know that we're looking to do it right now as part of phase 1, but and I think part of it is because it's one of the particular autoimmune condition that we know is going on in response to the statin, this statin-induced necrotizing myopathy. Mm-hmm. I think one of the protocols she had read about was that particular therapy. Mm-hmm. You have any thoughts on it? Any familiar at all with it? Apparently, I mean, it does. I haven't read up on it yet, but it doesn't come without potential side effects, it sounds like.
Exactly. That's always a risk there. So I would have to look it up in relation to that. I have actually researched it in relation to recurrent miscarriage, and it has some really good track records with helping women to carry babies to term. For a whole bunch of reasons. The downsides, I don't know about this particular condition. The downsides are you're looking at multiple donors usually when you get the IV immunoglobulins. It's not like just one person, so it's a bunch of donors together. And of course they're screening, right? They're just like blood screening, you know, but it runs those same risks as a transfusion. You're going right in. It's about a 3-hour process of getting it. It's expensive, but it can be helpful. The other thing that, you know, from a medical perspective looking at for autoimmune would be something like low-dose naltrexone. I don't know if you've looked into that at all or talked to anybody about that. And I don't know about it in your particular autoimmune condition, but they've used it in MS. They used it with thyroid problems. And some people have really good results.
What did you call? You didn't say methotrexate, did you?
Oh God, no. Oh God, no. No.
we've talked about that. I just wasn't sure what that was.
We've talked about that. That has a lot of downsides. LDN, low dose naltrexone. Naltrexone is a drug that they use for addicts, but they use it at higher doses, like 45, 50 milligrams a day. With low dose, just doing it at, you start at 1.5, you go to 3, you go to 4.5, and that's where you stop. And at that low dose, it tends to, you know, kick the immune system into being stable. And it's used a lot, you know, I don't remember the exact biochemical pathway, but that's used. The IV immunoglobulins can be helpful, I would say. I'd have to look at it for your particular condition to see by what mechanism is it helping. I totally understand how it was helping in the recurrent miscarriage. Totally get that. And you know, it's worth the risk for if you're trying for it. But it is, you know, anytime you do an IV, you run a risk of anything happening, right? The donors not being screened properly, contamination. And it is something where usually you're either going to a doctor's office for a few hours or they do home health where they come to you and set you up and you're laying on the couch for 3 hours while you're getting this infusion. So it's quite expensive.
Okay. All right, good to know. It's just something we'll keep in the back of the mind. She wanted me to at least check with some functional health people here to see who all delivers, you know, does it, in case we wanted to put that as part of the protocol at some point. But I don't think.
Yeah, I'll have a conversation with her, and so she's probably done more research on it than I have. So it's certainly worth looking into. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
and congratulations
cool. Thank
on adding a little extra weight to your frame.
Yeah, no, it felt great. It, you know, at least we know it looks like it can happen. It's just a matter of keeping up that sort of 2,200 calories a day, which is a lot more food than I thought it was. So.
Isn't that funny, right? It's interesting because people, I always find that we all are under disillusions about how much we actually eat. So if somebody's overweight and trying to lose weight, and they go, I eat like a bird, and then we have them add their calories, and like, yeah, like a, you know, a huge bird, 2,800 calories a day, let's cut that back. Or somebody says, well, I eat and I eat and I eat and I eat and I never gain weight. We're like, you got 1,500 calories a day going in, you no wonder. You know, so it's really like that perspective of keeping it up. And I think you just have to get in that habit of, and eating the more nutrient-dense or fat dense, right? Fat dense, or not fat so much as calorie dense foods versus eating the.
Yeah. Well, it's going to take a couple, it's going to take doing really two protein shakes of some kind or another a day for me to do it, is what I'm finding. So it's just, then it's a matter of making sure I don't let the day go by without doing it, because then you start backing up and you can't space the meals enough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And remember, we said, don't worry too much about that. Like, that's one of the rules we throw out the window when we're going to try to put weight on.
Yeah. Yep. For sure.
Okay. And the other thing
is,
I know you've looked at you and looked and said, okay, I don't think there's a blood sugar issue with what you were currently eating. Some of the starchier stuff can add extra calories as well, but you have to check it. Like sweet potatoes. Some people do great with sweet potatoes and other people don't. Quinoa, things like that.
I need to replace my sensor. But the first round I did, it's interesting. I definitely, I spike up at breakfast, but then I react pretty good throughout the day, it seems, even when I'm,
what's your breakfast that spiked you and how high did it go?
And I'm going to change my band setting. Lisa recommended I lower it to 75 to 130 is the band. I wish it was also. I wish, the Freestyle Libre reports don't allow you to sort of adjust the scale, right? It'd be nice if you could make that band wider, because I'm never going to go to 250 or 300. So get rid of that. But I can go 120.
Yeah, I would set your top at 110. Don't set it to 130, because I don't want you above 110.
And we're going to see the spikes either way, whatever they are, right? They're going to.
You'll see them. You'll see them better when it's set that way. So I would set it to 110. Yeah, and 70 at the bottom.
Okay.
That's what I set mine to, 70 to 110. It's really easy to see the spikes if you get them there.
I spike. There were some. I have to go back and look at it, and I think you might have looked at it as well. But I spike I can spike up to 120 or 130.
Yeah, so not too high. But those are
you're
things
saying
to look
you're
at.
You're saying it's not too high, or I guess when
well,
we say the 110 to so when you're talking about the band from 70 to 110, you're talking about a fasting glucose level in that range.
No, that's the total. Like, mine is set. My low end is set to 70. My high end set to 110. And so I see this band across it. And if I go above 110, I know it without even having to have checked it, because it'll go above. And I go, whoops, what did I do? I don't want it above 110. I want it. And that's the peak. The peak at 45 minutes after you eat something shouldn't be more than 110.
Okay, well, occasionally I may go to 130, I guess, but I think you just said that was fine, right, or not?
No, I didn't say it's fine. I said it's not as high as I was envisioning when you said you had the band set it up to 130. I was thinking, oh, my God, are you going up to 150? No, I still don't want you to go to 130. So what I would do is go backwards and go, what was it that I ate at this last meal that caused me to go up that high? Because if most meals you're staying, you peak at 105 or 90 or 100 or whatever, and then you come back down, and then there are certain meals where you go up to 130, those are the meals where you're looking at to say, okay, what are the foods in here that could have caused it? Well, I had lettuce and tomato and cucumber. I doubt it. Oh, I had a sweet potato. I had a piece of bread. I had whatever. Then you know that those are probably the ones you'd want to test again.
And check and see. Okay.
Yeah.
It typically happens at breakfast, but oftentimes it could be oatmeal and fruit, right?
Yeah. Oatmeal and fruit would shoot me up to 150 if I did it.
Okay.
Right. So I would say, you know, your meal, your breakfast meal, you can switch instead of oatmeal, you can do a chia porridge, right? Or something along the lines where you just do some chia. And instead of fruit, you know, maybe you just stick with, you know, a handful of blueberries instead of a bunch of other fruit. So try to adapt that in the sweet spot and the blood sugar. So you have access to the page, the glucose testing page. If you go to the home testing page under the discovery evaluations module, there's one called home testing right at the top. Click on that and learn about the glucose testing. I have some videos in there and I have charts and it's very detailed.
Okay. I'll look at it.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Great. Anything else?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Thanks, John. Yeah. All right. So, Marcia. Hey, Marcia.
Hi. So I have meniscus tears in my right leg, and I've had two stem cell procedures. They were autologous. And now my doctor wants to do the kind which is just injections from umbilical or the other kind from born babies. I don't remember what it's called. And somebody went against that because they said, you know, you don't know how it – and what reminded me was when you were just talking to John, has it been filtered? Whose is it? What kind of stems? What's the repercussion? So just curious about your opinion, because when I had the autologous, it was so invasive, and I was so traumatized by them having to get the fat out of me. And then also I can't easily give blood because my veins roll and they're hidden. Mm. You know, so it's a major issue for me to go give my own fat and my own blood. And the other thing is so simple.
You know, I think overall, and I'm much more comfortable with the stem cells than I am with the IV immunoglobulins, just because it's a less invasive process. I mean, you're sitting there, you know, direct into your veins with these immunoglobulins from probably 30 donors at the same time, because that's how they do it. At least that's what they do with the pregnancy salvage stuff. But I haven't seen much in the way of bad reactions that people are having to this. I know a lot of people who do it and get phenomenal reactions. So right. I think you need to research it to see if you feel comfortable. I think with the placenta, you know, I would guess, and I would research it, they're not, you know, taking placentas from moms with drug babies, you know, like moms off the street. So I don't know. It would be really good to see where you're harvesting this, how are you getting these placentas. But the truth of the matter is that if a baby's born in the hospital, they cut the cord and they have this beautiful placenta. And, you know, I don't know if they have to get permission from the mom to donate it or not. I know, because I haven't really researched it well enough. They do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I'm assuming that they do all kinds of testing, and they've tested the mom for, you know, hepatitis and you name it, any kind of communicable diseases. And the stem, you're taking out the stem cells, right? So I don't know that you're getting, I don't know enough about it to know if you're getting actual blood product, but it's like kind of like a transfusion where, you know, they have to go through this process of screening. And it's the same thing with John was talking about. I'm just talking, my more concern with the IV immunoglobulins is, you know, 3 hours with somebody else's stuff going into your system and those possibilities. But I still think it's relatively safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
It's just a matter of.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you find that it was stem cells?
Did I what?
Did you get improvement in your knee?
I did get treatment, but she told me that she thought she would need to do 3 to 6 procedures. And after the second one, I haven't gone back in 1.5 years because I wanted to lose weight first. And also because I'm able now to hike and, so it hurts, but it's not debilitating. And every time she did a stem cell procedure, it was 20 needles each time in each knee. And it's just, when I think about it, I get triggered. So I haven't calmed down my emotional body around the procedure. And if I get this new one, it's one simple shot in each knee.
Yeah, that would be much better. That would be much better. There are some, and I was at this recent conference, and I pulled some of the brochures from some of the companies. I don't remember exact names, but there were some that were experimenting with specific compounds to stimulate stem cell production versus giving you stem cells to somebody else. You may want to look into that stem cell stimulation versus your donor stem cell.
Okay. I'm sorry. Gail's over here and her dog just started barking, but I'll listen to what you said later.
Okay. Thank you, Marcia.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye. Okay. I think I turned you off. There I did. Okay. Good. Who else has questions? Star 2 raises your hand. Lynn Rose said goodbye. Bye-bye. Marcia put up some LDN stuff, so you might want to look at that. Marcia is taking LDN, so John, there's some good stuff for you. Enzymes with cooked foods, that's what Lynn Rose says. Yeah, that's typically what I would recommend. Or heavier meals, like some people make these raw meals that are loaded with nuts. And, enzymes certainly are going to help that, but for the most part, you want, your meals to be such that you don't need the enzymes. And then eventually when you get there, as you rebalance your body, the nosis yet skips all the defenses. Let's see. There's a whole bunch here. Or is it my massage, which we talked about? Let's see. Lynn Rose says you'd be surprised how many massage therapists avoid abdominal massage. Yeah, it's too bad. It's very too bad. It's, I think there might be some privacy issues. They're concerned about, touching body parts like that. I don't know. You can always do it through a sheet anyway. Let's see. Proteolytics, when you're talking about proteolytics between meals, that's what you're talking about, anti-inflammatory. So I've had people with various kinds of sports injuries or post-surgery hip replacement, knee replacement, where it just periodically flares up, where they would take anywhere from, 4 to 8 proteolytic enzymes between meals. And proteolytics are the protein digesting, like proteases. And those really help to break down inflammatory products in the bloodstream. So, and then there's the Brudzinski, I think it is. He's the one that had so much controversy, and they're trying to shut him down, but he's great results with cancer. But there's a lot of them that are using that, like 8 to 12 proteolytic enzymes between meals every day to help break down some of the cancer cells. So there's a lot of research there. So Marcia put up a couple of things on LDN. So John, you can look at that. We'll save the chat. We always save the chat so we can put them up. John's going to his team call. See you later. Our Wink ice cream paleo plant-based just arrived. I've never tasted it. Tell me about it. Wink frozen desserts. Yum. Organic stevia and monk fruit. Keep Wink ice cream alternative sugar-free. Make it wow, where'd you order this? Yellow peas? Oh my God, paleo keto. Yay. I will look at that. Thank you, Marcia. Wow. And they ship. Do they ship it on dry ice or something? Do they ship it all over? Is it a local? I'll have to look it up. Anyway, that sounds awesome. Because all of the ice cream substitutes out there are, loaded with sugar, agave, et cetera. Let's see. 100 calories for a pint. Holy cow, that seems to be my serving size. That's pretty nice. 12 pints for $76. So that's not too bad, like $6.50 a pint. Let's see, ingredients. Water, prebiotic fiber, inulin, pea protein, vegetable glycerin, ground flaxseed, natural flavors, may contain a trivial amount of sugar. I don't know what that means. Organic guar gum, locustine gum, that's thickeners, stevia, baking soda. Baking soda, that's kind of interesting, vanilla beans. Well, let us know how it is. It can be good for an occasional treat. I just found, and I don't know if I actually finished placing my order or not, because I found it on Facebook link and then I didn't go back, but it was these chocolate truffles and chocolate bars that sounded really outstanding. They were all, you know, raw and sweetened with monk fruit and stevia. So we can have our treats and stay healthy too. Yes, a serving size is a pint. It used to be for me. That's it. I don't like gums either. You know, I'm not crazy about them. But you know what? For that occasional treat that somebody may want to have, I think it's good. Unless you have specific FODMAP sensitivities or, you know, gut imbalances that create a problem. Yum. Thank you. Enjoy it. Don't overdo it, but it's only 100 calories for the whole pint, so even if you do overdo it, not too bad. Cleansing tomorrow anyway. Got 7 pints. Only eat one of them tonight, dear. Did you split it with Gail? Is that why you got 7? Because it looks like, oh, 7 is what it came in. That's right. It said 7. It comes in 7 pint size. Yeah, try it. Sounds good. Now, if you have pea protein problems, you won't want it. But cool. I love it. All right. All over from the East Coast, yeah. Cool. Gail is here to have some. Enjoy it. Tell us what you think when you taste it. Cocoa mint, yum. Cake batter, I don't know about that. That kind of concerns me. Cocoa dough, cinnamon bun, strawberry, salted caramel, s'mores. That's the flavors? Holy cow. I don't think I would want to stick with something simple. Because I don't know what those natural flavors are. That was the other concern I had. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Let me look in Q&A, and if not, we'll... These are all great questions, great conversations here. Is kombucha healthy, Alex?
Depends. It may not be. If you've got a yeast overgrowth, if you have problems with candida overgrowth, kombucha may not be good. It does contain wild yeasts. Marsha, and if you want more information about that, go to your recordings. And last month's recording where we did the probiotics, I had Steph Jackson come on at the end, and she talked about the kombucha, so you can find out more details there. Marsha, about invasive things. Oh, yeah, so she just asked it. Okay, cool. Ooh, smells good. My husband is making dinner, and he said he wanted to make soup because it's been so cold. So you're welcome. I'm going to see one more hand. That's Lynn, and then we'll call it a night. Lynn. There you go. Oops.
There okay. You go. Yep. So, yeah, I won't be long, but the stem cell conversation has me wondering. I have a friend who has multiple myeloma. She's also had breast cancer and other things along this line. Of course, she wouldn't listen or receive anything that I had offered in terms of nutrition, but she is doing this stem cell therapy, and I just it sounds like maybe this is a positive thing she's doing. She was getting quite ill after it, and so they were saying that it had to do with her body accepting it, so just curious.
Yeah, and that's the downside of the donor, right? When what Marsha did was, when she said autologous, that's when they take her own fat and they pull it out and they inject. So there's not going to be a rejection factor when you do it that way. But when you have a donor, same thing with IVIG, right, or immunoglobulins, right, you run the risk of your body not accepting it, right? And they're going to do screening and all that, but you do run the risk. So that's the downside of that. But for the most part, I think there's a lot of work going on right now. There's a lot of amazing things happening with it. And so, yes, there's always going to be a risk whenever you're injecting anything into your body. But I certainly see it as a better solution than some of the other pharmaceutical interventions and going in the hospital and having IV chemotherapy and all the stuff that's very, very destructive to the body. In this particular case, we're giving things to help stimulate the body's own abilities to heal itself.
Okay.
So.
Well, then I feel better. I just was like, you know.
Double-edged swords all over the place.
She won't do the food stuff, but she'll do this. So anyway,
thing, right? If you do a combination, that's when you're going to get the best results. So sometimes just doing the food stuff, the herbs and all that is not enough, right? It's a little, it's too little too late, depending
right.
on how much damage is happening. So when you have these, you know, low invasive type things, that are supporting the body, yes, but, you know, doing that instead of taking away the real root cause, which is, you
right.
know, harmful lifestyle and all, that's where I think the big mistake comes in, that people think that
mm-hmm.
it's one or the other. Oh, no, I won't do that, but I'll do stem cell instead.
Right.
No, it's really, it's a mindset thing. So much of this is mindset thing.
Right, exactly. Okay.
You know, yeah.
All right. Well,
thank
I
you.
Feel better.
Good. Hopefully she gets better and then just meet
yeah.
you and I want to do your diet stuff. Tell me what to eat.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. I'm going to check one more time on the Q&A. For sharing things up this week stuff. Oh, it's not refreshing. And chat, let's see. Judy said, thanks for another great call. Appreciate all you do for us. My pleasure. You guys don't really, I'm going to get teary-eyed here saying this. I got off the call with you earlier, Marsh, Jeannie, and I was like, I am so blessed that I get to do this, that this is what I get to do. I don't have to go out to work in a factory. Or I don't have to go work in an office. I get to work with all you amazing people and share these things I've learned and researched and all these insights that I've learned that help you. And I love it. It's such a great joy for me. And I appreciate y'all being there and allowing me the pleasure of doing this for you. So thank you. All right. Have a great one, everybody. I'm going to open up your lines so you can all say goodbye to each other. And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.